What is up, everyone? Alec here. Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Life Podcast. This week, we have an episode that is super fun. Honestly, we're covering a topic that, like, you'll hear me talk about, not a lot of people know about. And it was really cool. We have Jeff Borton joining us today to talk about fostering and adoption and what that looks like for families, how you can help families if you're potentially interested, what that looks like, and all the things that come with it. And it was a super cool episode, and it was really fun to listen to, just to hear the background of it and all the things that you and, like, I mean, honestly, I didn't even know take place to be able to foster and adopt. And Jeff shares some really awesome stories. And so I can't wait for you guys to listen. So without any more delay, here is this week's episode. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Life Podcast. I'm Alec, and with me, as always, is Miss Kelly Ablaza and Mr. Shane Sisk. How are you guys doing?
Doing so great.
I'm doing super.
Super.
I've been working on that.
Okay, nice.
Thanks.
Nice.
Thanks.
And we have a guest with us today, but I realized earlier that Shane's introduced a guest because he stole it from me, and then I've introduced every other guest. And Kelly hasn't gotten to introduce anybody. And so I think it would be good for Kelly to introduce our guest. We have no bio in front of us to read, but
this is so exciting. Okay, this is Jeff Borton, our family pastor. I need to give your credentials now, too.
No.
How long have you been at Long Hollow?
Yeah.
A decade or so? No, eight years. Jeff has been, am I allowed to say, like, my favorite supervisor ever? This is not brownie points.
This
is genuine.
Go ahead.
Okay, no, Jeff is great. He is a man who is wise beyond his years and lives how he leads. He's
true.
The real deal.
That's very true.
Loves his people, cares for his family super well, and is a very intentional leader. So I'm really excited because today we're talking about foster and adoptive families. And this is something super near and dear to your heart, Jeff, as
it
you
is.
Walked this with your family. So excited to chat about this topic.
Cool. Excited to be here.
But how are you feeling, Jeff? What word did you come up with?
You know, I listen to all these podcasts. I'm doing fantastic.
Fantastic. I don't think that's a word we've heard yet.
We have not. I don't think so.
I tried to look through all the variables, synonyms.
I saw you had the, what is it, the thesaurus out.
That's
trying
right.
to figure out what word to use.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of pressure being at this table with these two. You know, you can't just squeeze between two icons. So, you know, it's a big deal.
And you're sitting in, you know, the holy seat.
Wait, is this Robbie's podcast?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, man.
We're in the same studio. Those listening, we're in the same studio that Robbie does his podcast in. And Jeff is sitting in the seat that Robbie occupies.
Golly.
So no pressure.
But sorry, Pastor.
The Shekinah of glory.
Yeah, the dove is there.
Talk to me, Goose.
All right, Jeff, we try to start every episode with the parent hack.
Ooh, and so, this is one of my favorite parts of the podcast.
To this week's the parent hack I got is to use your child or children's lack of a sense of time to your advantage. Meaning, you know, kids can't understand, like, they don't have a concept of time. So if it's like you need them to hurry up, you may need not to leave for another 30 minutes. But you could say, hey, we got 15 minutes, and they don't know the difference. To them, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, it's going to feel the same way. And so, yeah, use their concept of time against them to either leave sooner or get out of a situation that you don't want to be in, you know. So anyways, thoughts, feelings. Kelly has feelings.
No, this, I'll be honest. At first, I read this topic and it enraged me because my children have zero sense of time. Honestly, nor do I. The other night at dinner, we had friends over and they asked Mark the question. They said, hey, what is the number one thing that gets on your nerves about Kelly? And he was real quiet. And then he goes, her sense of time. She has none. And I apparently have passed that on to my children. But I will share one tidbit that if you have a new baby, you could use that baby as an excuse baby. And what I mean by that is baby's got to eat.
True.
You got to change that baby. Baby needs a nap. So you do have this threshold. Now, I don't think that children should rule your life. However, That's dishonest. I was going to say you could lie and just let people think that it does and be like, I got to go home, got to feed this baby. When really you're like, I just don't want to hang out anymore. So let me get out of this conversation.
So what I'm hearing is, Kelly, is that anyone that listens that has known you when one of your kids was an infant.
I didn't do that.
I've heard about this baby.
I know a guy or a girl that uses this prop baby to get out of situations.
I think I will say this. I think when they're younger, it's great because you can be like, hey, 5 more minutes and you can do something for an hour and come back and they still don't realize it's been an hour. But as they get older, it kind of messes you up. Like when they start learning numbers and time all that stuff. I remember one of the first times we're driving down the road and I'm driving and one of my kids, is learning numbers in school and looks over my shoulder and goes, Dad, the speed limit's 55. You're going 70. And I go, hey, get back in your seat. You quit paying attention to what I'm doing. I'm so mad. But I've had to slow down since then.
But why? Just to be clear, 55 and a 70, or 70 and a 55 is never good.
That you don't know where I was going. Or what I was doing.
Maybe there was an emergency.
What's with all the judgment?
It could have been an emergency.
I feel like we're exposing all of our dark, fatal flaws.
I mean, I have none, so.
Oh, okay.
That's all why right. He's the host.
I feel like it messes with your kids, though. Like, I cannot tell my children, hey, guess what? On Saturday, we're going to go to our friend's house. Because if it's Monday, then every day that week, it's like, well, when is Saturday? Yeah. Is that 4 days? Is that 5 days? I don't know how to count. So it's irrelevant what you tell me, Mom. Mm-hmm. It's just I have to wait until, hey, we're going to go do this thing now.
It is.
Because otherwise.
It can definitely backfire on you. They were younger, you'd say, hey, 5 more minutes. Well, to them, they just keep coming back and asking when they felt like 5 minutes was up, whether that's 10 seconds or whether it's 2 minutes. Mm.
So, Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, and I know these guys are saying what I was saying. It like I've always tried not to lie to my kids, even if they didn't understand time, right? And so just thinking of a bunch of ways, more than what I tell them, but things like I remember when Gabe actually started learning numbers, to your point, Shane, like the GPS on my truck, when I have that in, it has a countdown to how long it takes to get there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So till this day, he still wants to watch that to see how much longer is it going to take to get where we're going. And that can be helpful, though,
right?
Because then he doesn't ask so much, but that's okay. But I think...
I also feel like that is setting him up for when he does drive and he's using the GPS, because we all do it anyways, but he's definitely going to be one of like, oh, that's the time I can beat it.
I can only hope. I can only hope.
That'll be a proud father moment.
Now,
without
speeding, unlike Shane, without speeding, I hope he can beat the time. I think of all the fun things like, hey, you got 5 more minutes to do this, but then I forget because I'm doing something else and it wasn't a big deal. There's all kinds of things like, hey, we need to go home. We need to change. They got to get to sleep. I mean, all kinds of good stuff.
Mm. Okay. Well, that's pretty good. So, Jeff, like Kelly said, today we are we're talking about something that you have firsthand experience in, but also I don't think a lot of people really understand. Mm. And I know I say that knowing I have a really limited knowledge on the process of fostering, which, side note, if you do foster, like, I instantly have an incredible amount of respect because I don't – that seems like the most heartbreaking process. To be like, hey, come be in our lives, be in our home, knowing that at any moment you could leave. But then the adoption process and all of that. And so, Jeff, like, would love to hear your story on y'all's fostering and then adopting and all of that process and, like, why you did it, what got you there, and all of that, just to help us kind of get to see behind the scenes of what that process looks like.
Yeah. It's been a wild ride and in all the right ways. I think if I had to preface it, I think, and I've wrestled with this for 2 days, I think I can say with confidence that if you're going to foster or adopt, it's definitely a calling, meaning God puts it in your heart. It's not something that that, you know, you get emotional, you know, you watched a movie about it and you think I should go do that. It's people's lives, right? Yeah. Like it's your family's life and it's these kids' lives. And so you should definitely feel a calling because there will be some incredibly rewarding days and some equally difficult days. Yeah. We've had plenty of both. So our story, so my wife Jen and I, this is our story. Before we ever met, God put in each one of us that we would adopt one day. And I think for her, as I'm just sitting here, I think she was either in New Zealand or in Belize when she started to sense that. I can tell you the orphanage I was at in Kingston, Jamaica, when I was like, all right, I could definitely see myself doing this one day. We were doing some ministry in Kingston, and that's where the Lord began to prick my heart about it. You know, fast forward, we meet, we get married, and throughout our time, we feel like we should be fostering or adopting one day, probably talking more about adopting than fostering. And we lived in Miami, and my wife Jen started to care for young single moms that were teenagers in foster care. The mom themselves were in foster care and got pregnant. Mm. And so Jen was interested in helping to do respite care for them, for their foster moms who would go out of town. And so we both had to get certified. And so we did. And Jen really engaged with that for a little while. And then we started to just feel like, okay, I think, you know, we plan to fully have our own family. And I think people thought because we wanted to foster that we couldn't have kids or whatever.
Right.
But that wasn't true. We were just like, we feel like this is what we should do. We don't have our own kids yet, and that might be a little easier than trying to navigate all of it. And I'm not saying you should do it our way or any way, but that was our story. And so we got certified, and then they said, great, if you guys want to foster. And I remember there are some key points along the journey that are kind of milestones in my mind, and one of those is the application process. So in the application process, at least when we were doing it, there was a sheet, and you had to check off like conditions or things that you did not want in a child, right? And so one of them was like, they light fires, right? And you're like, oh, wow. Well, it'd be cool if the kid didn't burn my house down. And that's kind of a fun one, but there were other ones like obviously special needs things and even bedwetting and this huge list of things. And knowing, so we're in ministry in Miami, Jen's working as an elementary teacher in a public school. I'm on staff with a church. Knowing our schedules and our pace and our lifestyle, we just knew there were some things that we wouldn't be able to accommodate. But I remember very clearly every check mark making on the paper, and it's burned in my head, feeling like I was saying no to a kid.
Wow.
Like you do not qualify to be cared for. And that was the first time I realized, like, all right, this is for real. Mm-hmm. You know, Jen and I talked about that a lot. So then we submitted all our stuff, said we'd love to foster a child. I don't know if it's classic Miami fashion or true across the board for fostering, but we finally got the call. And the call was, hey, we've got a boy for you. And we were like, awesome. And they're like, and his sister. And we were like, yeah, we were just thinking one. And they're like, so you'll just leave her then?
Oh, no.
I mean, we can put him in different homes. I'm like, okay. Well, we were like, yes, of course. I mean, we had the room.
Right.
All right, let's do it. And so we began our foster journey. The day they showed up, of course, my wife is great at hospitality, and so we had signs all over. Mm. And I'll never forget when they came to the house, and the little boy ran up to Jen, and he said, hey, can I call you mommy, like first thing? Mm. And she was like, yep. And so he ran right over to me and said, hey, homegirl said I could call her mommy. And I was like, heck yes. And so they're teenagers now. And so I'm not using their names intentionally, but they very quickly drew really close to our hearts. So we had them, I think 16, 17 months. Interesting journey. So here's some of the, you know, we talk about highs and lows. when you foster, you not only bring the child, you get to bring all their experiences and sometimes baggage. And we've been in student ministry for years, and it still was brand new to walk through someone's past. So the little boy would when we'd drive in our car, he'd sit in the back seat and he would just talk, and we love that. But he would tell stories. He'd tell stories about the gun deals he saw go down at 6 years old. He's telling us about how he watched a man get killed. He's talking about all these things. Obviously, Miami's a little different, but for us, we're like, how does a six-year-old, I mean, he knew it, but he hasn't processed it. His little sister had been physically influenced by her mom's drug and alcohol abuse during pregnancy. So those were things that we immediately, day one, were starting to deal with. And honestly, that it was hard, but it wasn't like, hey, we got to get out of this kind of deal, because we knew we were called to it, you know? And I think that's why you've got to feel called, is because there's going to be difficult days. We had so many great days. The course they assimilated into church with us, it was really funny, because just like here at Long Hollow, our church had police cars that directed traffic. And the first night that we went to go to church on a Saturday night, we had Saturday and Sunday services, the boy saw the police car and he's like, "Daddy, don't go out there. Popo's out there." He's like, "Don't just wait." And I'm like, "No, wait." And so instantly, whole different world, whole different dynamic. And we got to introduce him to policemen that loved him and cared for him and show him a whole different side. He gave his life to Jesus in the 16, 17 months that he was with us. And so we walked this journey. There were court dates, and there were times when we were super frustrated. The system was terrible. And I say all that because I think I'm balancing the tension between being real, but I also want to balance the tension with the impact, right? So like anything of value is going to be costly. And if God calls you to foster or adopt, it will not be like you see on TV. It's not going to be an easy road. But also the impact and the difference you can make in someone's life is incredibly profound. We miss those kids. We still have their picture on our refrigerator. And
do you keep in touch with them? Are you allowed to?
We could not.
Okay.
That's part of the story. Great question. Please fire any question. But so we had them, and they had an uncle that came. We got to a point where we're like, I think we want to adopt them. You know, like it's not easy, but we're getting there. And you know, after time, you start to work through things and. So I think we're interested, and an uncle came on the scene, and he got things together, and we thought, okay, man, it's better if they're with family. That's what we want. That was the whole goal. So we started doing this mutual parenting thing. We were going to counseling together with him, what's best for the kids. I mean, we walked a long road to help make this transition. Even to the point where, like, the judge was like, "Well, we can do this, but he doesn't have beds at his house for them. This can't happen yet." So we got beds, and I went and put them together, and we're like, "Okay." And the whole plan was, "Yeah, we'll hand off." We realized we got to take a step back, but we'll go get ice cream now and then. Like, we had no interest in not being part of their lives.
Yeah.
And so after we made the transition. He made the decision to cut us out completely. He pulled him out of the school that was right near our backyard, and did not want us to have connection with them. And so we respected that because it was his responsibility. It was very difficult. But what was cool is like some of our friends would see them at the park or in the grocery store and FaceTime us. And with that, when they call, we're just like, yeah, we're going to do that. We'll not reach out, but if they call us, then we'll encourage them and say hi. And I don't know. It wasn't too long ago. We were trying to guess how old they'd be now and stuff like that. But we'd got to keep in touch for a little bit. But ultimately, I think here's the impact. One, we saw Sean give his life to Christ, and here's what we know is spiritually they heard things that they would have not heard, that they had not heard before. Secondly, they had a sense of family that they never had, and when they left us, they did not have. But however, without God bringing us together, they would have not had a sense of what family could be like. That we, mom and dad, who love them unconditionally, I mean, the boy came at me with a wood baseball bat one time and said, "I'm going to kill you, Daddy." And so I just had to wrap him up, and he was mad about something. And he didn't want to, but it was just, he didn't know how to express himself. Yeah, you know, it was just different.
Yeah.
He came from with a lot of baggage, and yet we worked through all that, you know? But here, one of the things that we find peace in is knowing they had a sense, they know what family is. They know what it means to be a family unit that loves Jesus and pursues him. They heard the gospel. They heard the truth. Those are all things that will make a lifelong impact, even though we had them 16, 17 months.
Yeah.
And so that's where we find our peace. It was a difficult, yeah. And people said it's going to be difficult. Great. Okay. And I will tell you, it'll be difficult, or if you're in it, you know it is. But I would challenge you to consider the rewards that are on the other side. Mm. So obviously in adoption, but in fostering, you really begin to get a picture of God's love for us. Mm. And I am not comparing us in any way to God or anything like that, but God takes us when we're unworthy and undeserving and calls us his own and makes us his children and loves us and shepherds us. And mm-hmm. I think fostering, it's a beautiful picture of the gospel. It is a tangible picture of the gospel that it is hard to get that comparison otherwise. Mm.
You talked about thinking about adopting and not being able to. Have y'all gotten to go through the adoption process?
Yeah, a form with our oldest son, but not with them.
Gotcha.
So we have our oldest son that we call our son. We say, you know, we've adopted. It wasn't as formal because he was 18 when mm-hmm. he came into our lives, and so it's a little different. But he's son, we're mom and dad, like it's all that's there. But yeah, in terms of fostering, if the Lord puts it on your heart, mm-hmm. I would strongly encourage to be obedient to that and to explore what God has for you in that perspective. Mm.
Jeff, there's a lot of families out there who are listening who maybe don't feel called to foster themselves.
That's good.
But as followers of Christ, we all have a mandate to love people and to be hospitable and to share the gospel. How could a family best come alongside and support families in their church or in their community who are on the path of fostering and adoption? Like, were there times where you and Jen felt super supported by your church community, and what were those tangible things?
Man, yeah, that's a great question. It's a lot simpler than you think. It really is. When people just befriended our kids, and we call them our kids, when people did that just to know them and to love them, it meant a ton because it made them feel very normal. It made them feel like it was part of our life. That was huge. There were some families that were like, "Hey, I was adopted or I was fostered." One family in particular was like, "Man, let me just bless you guys with money for groceries every week." Completely unnecessary, but it was their way of saying, no, I walk this road and it means something to me. That was cool. And then there were people that were like, "Hey, why don't you guys go out? I'll watch the kids," of course, because it was fostering. They had to go through more of a process. But all of that held incredible value. We felt support, and none of that was extraordinary things we wouldn't do with families now. Long Hollow has some rap teams, which is really cool. So we have a lot of foster families at Long Hollow. And through our missions department, there's rap teams where it's, say, like a life group or a group of friends will gather around one foster family, and they try to meet all the needs that are necessary. Mm. And that is super unique. They'll help with things at the house. They'll do...
Shane's thankful, everyone.
They'll do all kinds of things. So... yes, it's helping and being supportive is way easier than you think.
The a number of times as you were talking, Jeff, you were talking about the journey, and it's, you know, when you hear a story like you just shared with your foster story, there's heartbreak, there's all these ups and downs, and I get what you're saying. I get that you're saying it's worth it, but it's, man, to me, just from the outside looking in, I just go, "Oh, that had to be crushing." You know, you're ready to take that next step for adoption, and then this uncle comes along, but you're right, you want what's best for the kids.
Yeah.
How did you guys walk through that process of, "Hey, this is the right thing to do. Was it just through prayer? Was it something God put on your heart, or was it just you went, legally, we have no grounds to stand on, and so we have to?
Yeah, I'm not sure it ever got to the legal thing. Maybe it did, but I mean, feeling that way anyway. I think the whole goal of fostering is the hope of restoration.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of fostering is realizing right at the beginning that there's a really good chance it's not going to be permanent. And so understanding the role of fostering was super helpful. Like, it could be permanent, but there's a really good chance it's not going to be.
Yeah.
So I think in the beginning, you prepare yourself. Well, we did. We prepared ourselves for that. And yeah, I mean, it was hard. We didn't go down the road a long way talking about adopting. We just thought, okay, maybe this is our next step, because their family wasn't getting anything. All the parents had been, their parenting rights had been terminated. And so, TPR, right? Terminating parent rights, right? I think that's what it's called. So all that happened. So we just didn't know. And so when the uncle stepped in, we thought, okay, here's a chance for them to at least be with family. And so, yeah, difficult for sure. Prayed through it and just trusted that we were playing the role we were supposed to play.
So when I was growing up, In the 80s. When I was growing up in the 80s, adoption seemed to have such a bad reputation and context, and there was embarrassment that went along with it. And I agree with what you said earlier. It is such a genuine picture of the gospel. And you've seen that pendulum switch almost to where people get that what it really is. And I love how you just said it's restoration. How do you think that switch came about? Was it just the church stepping up? Because I feel like just in my time in ministry, I've seen more churches embrace the James 1 mentality of we've got to take care of orphans and widows. And so do you feel the same way being in it, that it is switched, or do you feel like that's something that was just in different contexts?
Yeah, I think there's definitely been a switch. I do think there's been better education about it, but foremost, I think the church is better at addressing it. I think the church as a whole is understanding what Jesus calls us to when he tells us to love widows and orphans, you know? And we haven't got it right. I mean, honestly, I heard a stat one time. I think that if every church had one couple that would foster or adopt, it would wipe out in Tennessee, I think even more than wipe out all of the adoption and foster homes in Tennessee, if just one couple from every church. So we have a long way to go, but the education about it is definitely improved. And I think scriptural understanding, when you look at adoption foster from a perspective of restoration, it changes it. It changes the responsibility. We see our role. I mean, God's whole theme is restoring mankind back to himself. And this is a picture. You have kids who, through no fault of their own, have been abandoned or whatever, and literally the least of these, right? Yeah. They can do nothing for you. There's no gain whatsoever. We see that in Scripture. Jesus comes. That's the same thing with us, and yet he scoops us up and makes us his own. How can that not be a reflection of God's love for us?
Yeah, so, definitely.
So, Jeff, as we wrap up, what would be your encouragement to the parents that are currently in the trenches of fostering or the adoption process? And then what would be your encouragement to those that are listening that feel a stirring in their heart, maybe of like, hey, we've got a spare room, no one's ever in it, like we have the resources and all, like they may be starting the wrestling or they're considering and all that. What would be your encouragement to those two families? As they're sitting here listening.
One, conversation is always great. Like, we're starting with a podcast. If you know anybody that does it, that's a great place to start, is listen to their story. If you don't, a great place to start is to sign up for a MAP class, which is to meet there's some great Christian organizations that can walk you through the process, introduce you to people, put you in communities. So at Long Hollow, we have a sizable number of people that have fostered and adopted. And so to put yourself in communities where people are having conversations, we have a great foster and adoptive support group that meets here. It's just a reminder, you wouldn't have to walk the road alone. But I would say, so you use the example, I think it's a good one. I'm like, man, we got an extra room. We've got the resources. I would come back to the calling first. It's like, is God calling us to do this? Or is it something we're interested in? I watched a Mark Wahlberg movie last year, and it was about adoption. And it was so great. Does anybody remember the name of that one?
No, but I watched it and it is really funny.
It's really funny. And I did love the part where like everything was not easy. I was like, man, there's some truth to this. But I also sat there and thought, there's a lot of people that are going to want to foster after watching this because everything turns out okay in the end. And that's instant not always family. Reality. Huh?
It's called Instant Family.
Instant Family, yeah. I mean, it's a great movie. Highly recommend, I think, I hope. But
I mean, it is. If it's Mark not Wahlberg. Good,
then I didn't watch it.
If kids are listening, we just look at the rating, parents. Look at the rating.
That's exactly right.
I'm finding it.
This is a family podcast. So
it's PG-13. So okay. That means there's room for one F word.
Whoa, whoa.
Those are the. I'm just letting people know those are the qualifications.
That's actually
now.
Wildly that helpful.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like know that. Like that's the difference for language. That's the difference between PG-13 and R now is. An F word.
Just
like
one?
You get one.
Okay.
I can't remember what movie it was, but we were sitting there and PG, I think it was a Marvel movie or it was a superhero. I don't know. It was, but it was like, you don't blank. And I was like, or you blanked. And I was like, oh, okay.
Huh. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Did you get up and walk out?
No.
Okay.
It was the climax of the film.
So you weren't that offended.
Would we say that Shane is PG-13 then? Is that? Just kidding. Anyway, well, it's entertaining nonetheless. I watched the TV version, so no. I could just see a lot of families going, "Yeah, we should foster because that looks great." I mentioned it doesn't all turn out great. It does go back to a calling, like so that when it's tough, when you're going to court, when you're upset at the system, when you feel like you don't have support, but you rest in, nope, God called us to do this. There is a strength that comes far more than just an emotional decision. So if you are sensing one, I'd just start praying about it. Yeah. Jen and I prayed a ton. That was a big step. We didn't even have our kids yet, you know, so then we stopped fostering and then we said, okay, let's start our family. And then in the middle of that is when we met our oldest son. Mm. And it's just been a wild ride, but I wouldn't change any of it.
Yeah.
It shaped who we are. I love telling the stories to the boys, our boys now, our biological boys and our oldest son about fostering days and they see the pictures and letting them know, hey, this is the kind of family we are. This is who I hope you'll be. You know, we want to be a family that believes in families and in restoration.
That's good. Shane, Kelly, y'all have any other questions?
Just thank you so much for sharing your story. I have a lot of close friends that have walked the road of fostering, and I love that you talked about the calling piece because I firmly believe that God equips those he calls, not just that he's going to call the equipped. And there are so many people listening who maybe are thinking, I'm not at all equipped. I could not handle the adjustment, the emotional attachment, the heartache of watching kids go through a difficult time, the behavior that sometimes comes along with it. I nannied for a family who fostered and had to go through like 2 months of training, I think, just to be their nanny for the summer.
Wow.
And I remember working with this little girl, but it was beautiful. Like there were so many hard moments, but it was also really beautiful to see her blossom and be exposed to the gospel. And I think that's the key too, is as Christ followers, it's not optional if we care for orphans and widows. That's a mandate in scripture. You may not be called to foster and adopt, but you are certainly called to support those who do.
Absolutely.
And so I think that no matter where you are on the spectrum of listening today, genuinely ask the Lord, what role can your family play in the story of foster and adoptive families in our community? So maybe that's simply praying for them. Like,
no doubt.
That makes a world of a difference. Yeah. I've got a friend who is currently fostering, and the Lord put her on my heart the other day, and I just texted her, and I was like, I'm so proud of you. Thank you for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And she just broke down and was like, you have no idea the fact that just the prayers alone are so helpful right now. So I would just encourage you, if you're listening, be bold. Like, let those people know that you love them, that you're supportive, and all the things that you mentioned, Jeff. Like, hey, if it's offering a date night or showing up with some food or groceries or just getting to know these kids and embracing them, like helping them to feel welcome and a part of our community is so big.
And what you teach your family while you're doing that, right? So, like, let your kids see how you're embracing those. We have a friend who is fostering a special needs son, and she's had him for a long time. And we love it. He comes to our house and hangs out while she goes and does mom stuff. Mm. And our boys are learning, hey, this, I mean, they're learning a lot of new things, right? But they get to be part of it. And so I would say include your family as part of the deal, because even if you're not called to foster and adopt, you can certainly help nurture the compassion in your own family for people that do. And who knows, maybe your kids will one day.
Yeah. And I also would say, like, I feel as a whole, like there's just a lot of people that don't know that this is a thing, that like people hear about adopting. I just don't know if fostering is or if either one of them are just as, on the forefront of people's minds.
Sure.
And so I think that there's a lot that can be helped, like that there's a lot to be said about just if you hear people talking about it, being like, hey, here with this podcast, like share the podcast, because it's the stories alone that help see the process for those that may not know all the details. Mm-hmm. Just knowing stories has helped me understand these situations even more.
Sure.
But before we shut down, I just you talked about the rap teams that we have here at the church. How could someone be a part of that? And maybe that's something, Alec, you'll put in the notes afterward.
Yeah.
But how could someone be a part of a rap team? Because I didn't even know about that. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm like, golly, I'd love for our life group to do something like that.
Awesome. You can reach out to our missions team.
Okay.
So one way is right now, Jenna. Jenna runs all that. Jenna Snyder. So jenna.snyder@longhollow.com. You can email her if you're interested in being part of a rap team. And they do cool things. So like foster and adoptive families have a few different events a year where their families just get together and do fun stuff. So literally trying to build communities of people who are living at the same place in life.
Yeah.
And so we've seen that just take off, and it's really cool.
And that's Jenna, JENNA.Snyder, SNYDER, at longhollow.com.
Good call.
And then you can also either go to longhollow.com/adoptive and foster care with a dash in between each word, or just Google Long Hollow Church Foster and it'll be the first thing to pop up. And so there's resources and other ways to get connected there. But yeah, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time. See ya.
Bye.
Well, that is the end of this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it, getting to listen as much as I enjoyed getting to be a part of the conversation. And that's a conversation that we want you to be a part of. So if you text the word parent, P-A-R-E-N-T, to 98173, you'll get a link to a form where you're able to ask your questions that you may have, send us topic ideas that you'd love to hear us talk about, because we want to hear from you. We want this conversation to be both ways, not just us in a room, but you as parents or soon to be parents, a part of the conversation as well. And if you know someone in your life that is a expecting, soon to be, not yet, but wants to be, or a current parent, please send this to them. We want this to be a helpful resource more than anything. So please share it with whoever is in your life. Like it, subscribe to it so that you know when new episodes drop. Again, if you want to be a part of the conversation, and we want you to be part of the conversation, text PARENT, P-A-R-E-N-T, to 98173. Well, that's all for this week's episode. We will catch you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you later. Bye.